Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you to Rabbi Domirsky for bringing me in, and I hope that these words will be a plus for Shiri. That's how I know her. I don't know her, but I read the article on H.com and in Sarah Yochavid Rigler's book, which I see as the same. But I just wanted to get to know her a little bit so I could have in mind who I'm trying to be ma'ala, the neshama, and to bring forth whoever is here in the room, too. I'm not really a shtender person. I want the recorders to work, so okay. Okay, so I asked Rabbi Domirsky, what would he like to hear about? He said, whatever you want to speak about is fine. I sent him a bunch of titles. I tried to think what would be appropriate. A lot were energy titles, because I'm into like the energy of Shvat, or bringing forth our kohalas, things like that. But it's a Russian place, so I stuck in a Russian-sounding one. Master Plan, right? Rule of the Jews, the Torah and the world. He picked that one. So that's what we're going to talk about. So, but it happens to be one of my favorite subjects, actually, because my main subject that I want to talk about is the mission of the Jews in this world. What is our role and goal on this planet? So for anybody who has not read Rabbi Aryeh Carmel's book, Master Plan, I totally recommend it. I'm going to give you a few ideas from it. But for me, that was a transformational book because it's really a forest book rather than a trees book. And so we're so often used to looking at the trees. How do you do this and how do you do that? Halacha, hashkafa, but all in separate little parts. But what is the plan of the whole thing? And that's really what I want to talk about today. So the role of the Jews all together, we have every person has a personal role. And as Jews, we have a double role. So every single human being is created in the image of God. Every single human being on the planet, Jew and non-Jew, has the ability to use their free will to connect with the divine and grow themselves and create their own Olam Haba. Jews are born with Olam Haba. They could lose it if they blow it. Non-Jews are born without it. They can gain it if they work towards it. But every single person has that capacity. And the Jews have a secondary purpose, which is to transform self, everybody, transform world. That's us. That is our job. So we are the Am HaNivchar, the chosen people, but Nivchar sounds like Bechor, firstborn. I know there's a Bechor in the room, actually, just outside the room. So what is the Bechor? Who in this room is a firstborn in their family? Oh, wow. Yeah. So, and everybody that's a parent has a firstborn, right? So the role of the firstborn, it turns out, according to Hirsch, is to be the liaison between the rest of the kids and the parents. They're like a mini parent sometimes, at least they think they are. I don't know what it's like in your families, but I certainly had even my daughter, I had six kids in 7.5 years. So my firstborn was actually, I was the Ima, and she was the mommy. I mean, like they would run to her for different things. They didn't actually call her mommy, but we shared the role. My husband was a busy Manhattan lawyer, and really, she now has twins. And I look at her with her 2-year-old and her 9-week-old twins and wonder, how is she doing it? And yet, I had twins also with a 4-year-old, a hyperactive 3-year-old, and baby twins. But she was my 4-year-old, and she was a really big help. It makes a big difference. Anyway, that's the job of the Am HaNivchar, is to act as the Bechor in the family of nations. So really, we are supposed to be an Or LaGoyim, and it's not something that we talk about a lot these days. It's interesting, America as a Judeo-Christian nation, Judeo not because there's Jews here, but because we have Jewish principles underlying the philosophy of America and what America is about. Think about one of the symbols of America is Lady Liberty in the harbor with her torch up high, shining a light into the nations. So there is a concept, the early settlers to this country, the early non-Jewish settlers, Christian settlers, really thought of themselves as the new Israel, taking upon themselves the role of the Jews, spreading light in the world and a God-based philosophy among the nations. That was something that they thought of. So they understood that was our role. They, in their minds, thought we dropped the ball, so they were picking it up. But there is that concept. But that is our role, is to be a light unto the nation. So I would just want to start with a few quotations about who we are. So I'll just give you 3. I'll read them in English. So the first one from, let's see, the first one from Yeshayahu. Okay, so this is from 42:6, in case anybody wants to look it up. I shall make you a covenant people and a light unto the nations. That's where the Or LaGoyim comes from. That's what our role is, a covenant people and Or LaGoyim. Now, the second one is why? Genesis 12:3, and all the families of the earth will be blessed through you. Vayei bracha, right? You will be the bracha. Everything will come through you, however It's interesting to look at the United States of America and how this country is blessed so far. We have been blessed in this country, and the fact that we've been blessed brings bracha to the country. So far, so good. But that's really, so the what is that we are supposed to be an Or LaGoyim. The why is that all the families, all the nations will be blessed through us. And the how is Shmot 19:5 and 6. The whole world is mine, but you shall be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. What does that mean? A mamlecha konim v'goy kadosh. A kingdom of priests and a holy nation. This is how we actually do our job. How are we supposed to be an Or LaGoyim? How are we supposed to bring bracha to the whole world? It's through being a mamlecha kohanim v'goy kadosh. So what is that? Mamlecha kohanim is kohanim, right? We have three classes, Kohen, Levi, Yisrael. Kohanim are the liaison, really, between Hashem and the rest of the people. That's our job. Each and every single one of us, male and female, young and old, Kohen Yisrael, Levi, I'm dyslexic as you could tell, mixing things up, but each one of us is supposed to be a Kohen, vis-a-vis the, really if you think of a priestly class, who then is our congregation? It's the rest of the world. Right, so really, we're supposed to be the ones who lead the way and show the rest of the world the right way to behave. Or LaGoyim is a light. It's something that you see, not something that you hear. It's not our job to go preaching, and it's not our job to be necessarily even writing articles for the rest of the world. It's our job to live in a way that shines so brightly that people look at us and say, wow, what makes you like that? What makes your marriage like that? What makes your family like that? What makes your nation like that? We're supposed to have a state also. This is not Zionism. This is Torah. We're supposed to have a state, and the state should have a government and encouragement and teachers and violin players, and I saw here today chess players. Right? You're supposed to have every different kind of a person in a state so that the state functions, bless you, the state functions in a way that people look at that state and say, wow, what makes your government so functional? What makes your education work so well? What makes you like that? Just because we're shining, not because we're preaching. So that's our job, is to be shiners of Hashem's light. How do we get that light? Where does that light come from? How do we become the Am HaNivchar? How do we become the Jewish people altogether? It's an interesting question, because if you understand that Adam and Chava are the parents of all humankind, and yet we look to Abraham and Sarah as our parents, but really they're the children of Adam and Chava too. So how is it that we actually become a separate spiritual species? Spiritual species, by the way, is the language of the Ramchal, not Rav Hirsch, who this book, I brought a copy in case anybody wants to look at it. Aryeh Carmel's book is based on Sefer Horeb by Rav Hirsch. Right, so Hirsch was not into Kabbalah at all. He didn't do species talk and spiritual stuff. He was much more of a scientific analyzer and analysis of the Torah. By scientific here, I mean looking at this closed system that it is, replacing physical detail with halachic detail, and from that trying to derive a principle. So I'll just give you, for instance, of a Hirschian analysis from within the system, right? What is Shabbos for? Right? So you might say it's for rest, and that doing something that's not restful is breaking Shabbos. Now, we all know enough halacha to know that's not the case, right? Certainly, I see the majority of the people in the room are women, but you know Shabbos is often not that restful. I'm getting ready for it, for sure not. But even on Shabbos, there's desist, but there's not necessarily rest. So, but if you look at the halachic details of Shabbos, you understand it's not about rest. It is about desist, right? It's about ceasing creative activity. But you get that from analyzing the halachic parameters of Shabbos, not by listening to the language, on this day shall you rest. So, so that's how Hirsch view the Torah, the whole thing he analyzed within the system to come up with what things mean. Anyway, so let's go back to how did the Jews get there from all of humanity, because we do have a separate, we do understand that we are a separate spiritual species. Our soul comes from a separate root from the rest of humanity. Just since there are some younger people in the room, anybody who's read Harry Potter. So in a way, we're like the wizards and they're like the muggles. We look the same. We look the same, and yet inside we're completely different. So how does that work? How did that work? So you have Adam and Chava, you have all of humanity. Really, all of humanity was supposed to be totally connected to Hashem. But Adam and Chava dropped the ball, right? So they were monotheists. it wasn't Abraham that was the first monotheist. Right? They were monotheists. Noah was a monotheist. There's a few different monotheists along the way. Abraham was the first monotheist with a mission. He was the first monotheist who said, this means something. And I better tell the rest of the people about it. This is an important thing. I have to change the world by bringing this information that there is a God and he created the world for our benefit and therefore there's stuff we're supposed to do and we're supposed to be in relationship. And gosh, this is totally different than the way my father taught me. I heard somebody talk about Terach's idol store. Rabbi Feldheim in Denver calls it the idolatry. Right? So that's the name of his store. So it's different than what he learned. You got it. When I speak in Mexico, I have to wait for them to get the jokes. But here in Chicago, you have a Dollar Tree store, right?
Yeah.
The Dollar Tree. Okay, you have to be a little New York, a little, you know. Okay, anyway. Anyway, so once Abraham made this recognition that there is a God and that there's something to do about it, so then Hashem said, Abraham, you and me, we're going to transform the whole world. And your children are going to be the transforming agents. I'm really excited to work with you. And Abraham said, great. And the actual pasuk says, b'me'ida. How will I know? Which is a strange question to ask God when he's talking to you straight up, right? How do you ask him, how will I know? And his answer is even stranger, right? His answer is, your children will be strangers in a strange land, and they'll be oppressed and tortured, and after 400 years, they're going to come out with a lot of stuff. Like, that's a very weird answer to a very strange question, right? So our sages say, very strange, what are they talking about? So really, the question is translated as, okay, Hashem, I get why you picked me. I picked you, right? I separated myself. I became an Ivri. I stand now on the other side of world opinion. Ivri means on the other side of, right? Abraham was the first Ivri. He came from Me'eva LeYarden, from the other side of the Jordan River. But we're not all called Ivrim because of the geographic location from which Abraham came. It's from the opinion location that he came, the other side of it all, right? So he's an Ivri. So he says, Scott, I get it. I'm an Ivri. But how will my kids earn that? Why are you saying this is going to go to them? And anyway, I don't even have any, but let's say I just do. So then how will they earn it? And God says, don't worry. I have a workshop designed just for them. It's called Egypt. I'm going to send them into Egypt, and I'm going to give them the opportunity to completely blend or step on the other side. But I promise that they're going to come out with the right resources, whatever they need, physical and spiritual, whatever they need, they're going to come out from there with what they need to get the job done. Okay, so now they're in there. Did we actually accomplish as a family? Because it was just a family that went down. We're still the regular stuff, regular human beings when we go into Egypt. Did they actually accomplish it? They didn't, right? We actually got scooped out of Egypt based on the promise, not based on what we accomplished, right? That's part of the meaning of Pesach, Passover. It couldn't be that the whole holiday is really called after the name of one. Hi. Of one of 10 plagues. Really, according to Rabbi David Foreman, the name of the holiday, Passover, what was passed over, of course, with the houses and the blood and all that stuff, what was passed over was our readiness. We hadn't really earned it. We weren't really ready to get out of Egypt, except for Hashem said, I made a promise, and I'm going to pass over the prerequisites and take you out right now, just like this. Take you out, you're going to have your little time in between Exodus and Sinai, but really what going through Egypt was a squeezing out process. I'm going to make you into somebody different, completely different. Mitzrayim, Egypt, is narrow, constricted. Think of it like the old washing machine with the rollers, or the, we got put through the rollers and wrung out, where every little piece of regularness was squeezed out of us so that we were squeezed tight like a sponge, and then with that squeezed out, so that way we went to Sinai and opened up and absorbed the Or HaTorah. All of the light of the Torah was absorbed into those empty spaces. So that through that dual process of being squeezed out and then absorbing the light, that's how we became completely transformed. So that we are, in fact, a glow-in-the-dark people. Right? We are. It's a whole darkness that's in the whole world, and yet we glow. That's who we are. We are glowers. And if you want to know how to get recharged, because everybody who's had glow-in-the-dark stuff knows that eventually the light fades, right? Where's our recharging station? Do you know? Israel, another one. Shabbos, another one. Torah. Okay, we can learn Torah, right, for sure. The sukkah also. The walls of the sukkah are like the Ananei HaKavod, right? Like the clouds of glory. And it's inside that where not only did we absorb the Torah at Sinai when it was given to us, but there was 40 years of continuous absorption of all that light surrounded by the Ananei HaKavod while we were in the desert. That was our incubation zone, right? That whole thing. So we were incubating as a nation, completely transforming from who we were to who we could be into regular people, into a nation of light. So a nation of shining. So that's what was happening during that time in the desert. We were completely transforming. Then we're given, along that time, during that journey, we're given all the laws. And then into the land of Israel, we go with the additional group of laws that has to do just with the land of Israel. And it's through that, through keeping that, that we start to light up the world. Now, how does that work? What is the Torah really? We often talk about the Torah being the guidebook, right? Guidebook for what? Right? So we have this guidebook for how to live, but really, it is a guidebook on how to live, but it's a guidebook for how do you use the physical to grow your spiritual? How do you make that connection? That's what the Torah is about. Everything in the Torah is how do you walk a path to grow your soul? That's what it is. That's what halacha is. Is how do you walk, halacha, it's a tahalich, a process, right? The root is the same, walking, and Jewish law and process is all the same root. It's a process of actually physically walking. How do I absorb light and shine light in this world? That's what it's about. How do I transform my soul? Right? Because we understand that before we're born, we're a soul. Hashem makes us a soul, and the Gemara in Nida even talks about how we're made as one soul, just like the Adam creature before it was divided into Adam and Chava was one whole creature and then divided in half. Our soul was one whole soul, divided in half, half sent into a male, half sent into a female. Hopefully, like about tomorrow, you'll meet your soul mate, right? Mm-hmm. and then the work of marriage is knitting those two soul halves back together, right? So we're a soul before we're born. It's dropped into a body. Then our body, we wear our body, basically, until our whole journey here is over, whatever it is, 40 years, 19 years, a week, 120 years, hopefully. But eventually, we leave behind our body, and we're a soul still. So we have to ask, what is the point of wearing a body and working in this world? It's really about transforming our soul. Because really, who we are is just the distance between the entrance and the exit. Right? Because how we enter the world, the parents that we have, the education that we get, our learning ability, disability, our physical strength or weakness, whatever it is, Hashem sets that up for us. That's Hashem's gift to us. He sets up our life, this century that we're born into. Imagine if you were born in the exact same place that you were born 100 years ago. Your life would be very different, right? Imagine that you were born exactly at the time that you were born, but in Afghanistan. Your life would be very different, right? So Hashem picks the country, he picks the time, he picks the parents, he picks the body, he picks how it works, so that you have a body to wear and an arena to operate in, and through that, you have the opportunity to grow your soul. It's not enough just for each one of us to grow our souls. As I said, that is for every single human being on the planet. But as Jews, we have more than that. But at least we know, that's what the Torah is a guidebook. How do you use the physical to grow your spiritual? That's what it's for. And it's divided into two basic sets of laws, do's and don'ts. Right? The do's are grow your soul this way. This is stuff that makes an impact. Do this stuff. And the don'ts are skip these things. These will diminish your soul. So don't do this stuff. Right? And then lots of fine print. But basically, that's what it is. Grow this way, skip doing it that way. Okay, so then as a group, we're supposed to try to figure out how to do this because we need to do it as a group. So let's talk just for a minute about different ways to call the Jews and different ways to divide up these laws. So first of all, people have noticed that there's lots of kinds of laws, and they have been divided up and put into categories. So the first categorization of the laws was the Mishnaic categorization, right? There's six books of the Mishnah divided into 60 tractates. So it's all divided by subjects so that you have an encyclopedia of Jewish law and how to learn it. It's written in a way that's easy to memorize. For those who are zochah to do that, I don't know if anybody's got the Mishnah Baal Peh, but it's supposed to be Baal Peh, right? You're supposed to have it memorized. Then, and that's considered a mnemonic device. It's supposed to help you remember everything else. Wasn't quite enough of a mnemonic device, so they wrote the Gemara. Also, all these laws came from Sinai, but we have a container where they're all held, and that's really in people's minds, in the minds of people who learn Torah. But the book helps remind you what those are. So that's Mishnah and Gemara. So that's been divided that way, 6 and 60, right? So you have, that's what the Shas is. Then another way to divide it was the way the Rambam divided it into 14 different chunks, and he rearranged everything. And he wrote the Yad HaChazaka, the Mishnah Torah, so that's just rewriting everything and into a different way to understand it. Rav Hirsch divided it into a different way. Those were all by subject. Hirsch divided it into function. How do these laws work in our lives? And he has basically five different sets of functions. So the first one is, let me just make sure I say it right here. Okay, the first set of laws is justice towards other people. So that's the first set, just justice. How is it supposed to work? Justice towards other people. Then it's justice towards the environment. How do we take care of this world? How do we set up the world? Then, building on the first one, is love and concern for other people. So it deepens it a little bit. Not just justice, but love and concern. And then building on the second one is enriching the environment, making the environment into a better place. That's the environment all around us. I'm not talking modern-day environmentalism, although there's probably some of that in there, too. And finally, there's the inner life. Learning Torah and connecting to Hashem, really, that's the root of everything and the goal of everything. Right, so without having that basic root, that's why the Rambam wonders, is knowledge of Hashem one of the 613, or is that the prerequisite of the 613? What's the story with that? So that's the question. So it's the root and the goal of everything is the inner life. How do we transform the world? Now let's look at the Jewish people, and how do we relate to these laws? Right, so we have four, there are, turns out, 70 names of the Jews, four that we use, really three that we use, and one that's a little bit extra, but four that are in the Torah. All right, so Ivri we discussed. That's the first one. What can you think of the other ones? Yehudim, right? And? Yisrael. Gold star for the fourth. You'll know it in English probably faster than you know it in Hebrew, because I'm sure you've heard of Kahal, Adah, Yeshurun, Jeshurun, right? Right, Yeshurun. Yeshurun's the fourth one. Okay, so let's look at those four names. So really, if we understand a name, we understand the nature of who we are. So the first part of who we are, the first aspect is Ivri. We stand on the other side. That comes from Abraham and Sarah. We are separate. We're not them. Right? That's the first thing you have to know as a Jew, is that you're not the rest. Okay? But it's a not name. It's not a yes name. It's just who are you not? You're not them, and you stand alone. So the capacity of the Ivri is the ability to stand alone. So that's the strength. You know who you're not, but you also are alone. So, and an Ivri sometimes has to be able to be alone in a family, alone in a community, certainly alone in the world. Hopefully we can pull together to be alone in the world, but sometimes being an Ivri means pulling on your ability to stand alone. What's the second name? The second name is Yehudi. That's who we are, right? Yehudi comes from Yehuda, the fourth son of Leah, and she names her children after her feelings. So there's four wives of Yaakov, and they know there's supposed to be 12 tribes, which means each wife is supposed to have three kids, right? Four wives times three kids, right? So Leah has the first one, Reuven, and she's feeling hated, the whole switcheroo with the Rachel and Leah. So she's Reuven, because God sees my pain. Second one, Shimon, because God hears my pain. The third one, Levi, because God accompanies me in my pain. right? So she's feeling pretty miserable. Now she has a fourth. And she says, Hapam Odeat Hashem. This time I will thank Hashem. Right? So the fourth one is named Yehuda. And we're all from the 12 tribes, but we're all now named after that one. Thank you. If we would call, instead of calling us Jews, really, which is the transliteration of Yehudim, the translation would be thankers. We would be called the thankers, right? The people of thanking or admitting. We admit that God runs the world. We're thankful that he does a better job than we could. I heard from Rabbi Yehuda Kahan. You know the difference between a God and a Jew? Yeah? God knows everything, and a Jew knows better. Or we think we do, right? So we'd like to tell Hashem what to do. But in fact, we do admit God actually does know better than us. He's the one who should be running the show. So that's Yehudim, right? So what's the next one is Yisrael. Where does that one come from?
When Yaakov struggled with the angel.
Right, when Yaakov struggled with the angel, Yisrael. So we are called the B'nai Yisrael. It's interesting because the press today would like to call us the B'nai Abraham, which is not a word we ever use about ourselves. We're not the B'nai Abraham. Right? We do talk about Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov as our patriarchs, but we're not the B'nai Abraham ever. But the press wants to call Christian Jews and Muslims all the children Abrahamic faiths, right? That's not our title, just so you know. Just making that very clear. There's nothing in my last Shavuot. I mean, we definitely have we are looking to the same Avinu Sheba Shemayim in the end, but there's a lot of different like garb that Avinu wears in each different religion. So we really don't have something in common. It's not Abrahamic faith. So we are who we are. They are who they are. Nevertheless, we have in common, we can look back in common to Abraham. But we don't call ourselves that. We are the B'nai Yisrael. B'nai Yisrael is who we stand with. Right? We're one people. So it's not enough to know who we're not, or even just to know that we stand alone but stand for something. But we have to stand with others. We are a family. And as a family, of course, like families do, you know the definition of a dysfunctional family? Any family with more than one member, right? So it could be functional too, but here we are. We are a family. We're like siblings. We drive each other nuts, and we love each other. That's what a family does. Right? A friend of mine made Aliyah in her 60s to Israel. She was a widow. She was crossing the street, and she fell in the middle of the street. Before she hit the ground, she told me, somebody was there to put something under her head. Somebody else was there with a bottle of water for her. Somebody else wanted to know why at her age she is wearing shoes with heels that high. Somebody else wanted to know where she lived. And a fifth person told her that he could get her twice the apartment for half the money. So that is a family, right? They're all there, and they all think they have something to say, right? Right then. So that's Yisrael. We are a family. We need a critical mass. We can transform ourselves alone, but we can't transform the world alone. We need a critical mass of world transformers, a group that we bond together with. And with that, we will be the seeds for world humanity transformation. Now the fourth name. The fourth name, Yeshurun. What's the root of that? Yeshar. And Hirsch says that's how we transform the world. Through being Yeshar. Right? Tzadik katamar yifrach. Think about a tamar is very yeshar. A palm tree grows straight up. It has no branches deviating in any direction. It's just straight up. And it sheds its past and keeps on growing, sheds and grows. It just grows straight up. It's very directed. It also happens to be that it's very flexible. Right? It can bend way over in a hurricane and then regain its composure. Like a lamed. Right? The lamed, the tallest letter, stands straight up. But if it needs to, it can bend over backwards to accommodate a letter coming down in a row above it. So it has that flexibility without losing its integrity. So that is being yeshar. We have to be very yeshar. We have to be so yeshar because that is the conduit through which our light shines. Yeshar is a language everybody speaks. Not everybody can understand respecting your parents by standing for them or respecting God by kissing a doorpost. right? Not everybody understands the language that we speak, why we do what we do, why we dress how we dress, why we eat what we eat. For a lot of people, it seems very strange. For a lot of Jews, it seems very strange, right? So why do we do all this stuff? But yashar, being straight and honest, is the language everybody the world over speaks and everybody recognizes. So when we become, and we're aimed towards that, we haven't yet achieved it, but when we get to the place where we are so yashar that everybody knows us as the people of yashar, the people of absolute straightness, we will shine so brightly that people will look at us and say, wow, what is that? So we have to know who we're not, and we have to know who we are. And the way that we get there is by really emulating Hashem and keeping the halacha. Hashem, think about it, Hashem created the whole world. We know Beferish from an Uncle Moshe song, that Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is truly everywhere, right? Not a question. That's where Hashem is. So our Kabbalists ask us, and even though they wrote before Uncle Moshe, they still ask the question, if Hashem is everywhere, how are we here? Right? It's actually a good kasha. How could we possibly be here if Hashem is everywhere? So to answer that question, there is the Kabbalistic concept of tzimtzum, of contraction, of Hashem scooching himself, so to speak, out of the way to create space for the world to exist. And that's why we call Hashem Hamakom, the place. Because Hashem is the place, and we live inside the place. We live inside Hashem. So Hashem got himself, so to speak, physically out of the way. Not that there's anything physical about Hashem, but in order to create space for this physical world to exist, but also mentally out of the way, so to speak, in order for us to have free will. Because if Hashem's will, if his ratzon filled everything, there would be no room, so to speak, for us to make a decision that was contrary to what Hashem wanted of us. And yet we totally can. We can see that. We can use our breath that Hashem gives us to say whatever we want, nice or not nice. Right? We can use our hands to lift any burger to our mouth, whether it has cheese and bacon on it or not. Right? That's completely up to us. And if we eat something that's not kosher, our body will still digest it and give us energy. That's Hashem digesting our food and giving us energy from whatever we choose to put into our mouth. Right? He still gives and gives and gives and gives and gives, whether or not we do what he asks us to do. But he gives us space for us to make our own decisions and to exist and to do what we choose to do, right? So Hashem made space for us, and he said, please, the whole point of me creating you is I want to give to you. I want to be in a relationship with you. And I could only be in a relationship with you if you choose it, right? We have all these different relationships that we talk about with Hashem, but the strongest relationship really is that of lovers. That's the pure relationship that you can only be in as long as both parties choose it. My husband, when he was 17, worked in a liquor warehouse for Seagram's in New York. A bunch of Italian guys moving cases of liquor. So, Catholic guys. This was a little while ago, when we were younger. Anyway, so they're all sitting around for lunch one day, and one of the guys comes in and says, hey, I'm engaged! And all the guys are like, oh, great, who are you marrying? This is Maria. I love her. And so one of the guys says, what are you marrying for love? You should marry one of your father's paisano's daughters. That's who you should marry. Says, you marry for love. First you love her, then she love a you. Then you don't love her, and she don't love a you. And then you need like a gun or a divorce or something. So the Catholics need a gun or a divorce or something because they don't have a divorce in their religion. We fortunately learn divorce first because before you get into something, you have to know how to get out. Which means that every day that you're in it is because you chose it, right? Because you could leave it. And you could leave it tomorrow as easily as you could leave it today, which means you could choose it another day and see how it works, right? But when you're in it, it's because you chose it. So it makes your marriage strong because it's a marriage of people who are choosing to be in it. That's why that's the relationship referred to in Shir HaShirim, the holiest of all of our books. It's the relationship of two, not equals, but peers, lovers, right? Who are in this relationship because they both choose it. So Hashem said, I'm going to give you a whole world, and I want you to choose it. But I need a special group of people who will choose it and live that choice in a way that shows everybody what a great choice this is. Because I want everybody to choose it. So I need a special light shining people who will walk a special path in the world, who will shine so brightly that they're going to help everybody want to choose this. So that's really the role of the Jew in the world, is the light shiners, to really show off Hashem's handiwork in the world, to really show off what it could be like to live in a relationship with Hashem, to live deeply in that relationship. It's interesting. I unfortunately experienced my own loss about a year and a half ago, and I recently communicated with another mother who lost her daughter, and I sent her the title of my favorite book on so far. I haven't found a better one yet. On mourning, it's called "And God Created Hope," and it's written by a conservative rabbi. But I was looking for a Jewish book that dealt with feelings, because most of the Jewish books I saw dealt with halacha. This is what you do. This is where you can go. This is how you live. But how do you deal with what's going on inside your heart? Right? I really needed a book to help me with that, and I wanted a Jewish book that. So this is your path of grief through early biblical stories, which means Chumash, right? So I really appreciated having it, and so I sent her the name of the book. She sent me back saying, "Oh, I see you're very Orthodox." She said, "I gave up my relationship with God as soon as my daughter died." That I felt like I had a great relationship, and after she died, I realized my whole relationship was just a farce. He was just using me. God is just using me. And she was so angry. The letter was full of anger. And I thought, like, how do you... It's such a hard life to go through if you don't have a relationship with Hashem where you know that everything is coming from love even when it's in such a difficult time. You know, if you really can feel the love even when your heart is breaking, you at least feel the embrace of a Hashem who says, "You're just a spiritual being having a physical experience. It's a really super difficult physical experience. I'm going to carry you through it, but in the end, you're spiritual to your core, and you're connected to me in your core all the time, forever." Then you live in Olam Haba, or in touch with Olam Haba, even in Olam Haza. Even in this world where you have a little touch with Hashem, where you can always feel that connection. And the deeper you can connect, the stronger an experience you can have here, the more you can shine, the more you can make Hashem look good, the more people want to have a relationship with Hashem. That's really our job, is making Hashem look good, making His Torah look good, making His people look good. Right? Not in a fake way. It's not just about dressing nice so that people think the Jews are good. It's about actually being nice so that people will know that Hashem is good. Really, that's what we're supposed to be doing. So how do we do that? We do that by emulating Hashem, right? So Hashem made space for us, and our job is to make space for Hashem, right? So Hashem says, "V'asuli mikdash, v'shechanti be, make for me a mikdash, and I will live in you," right? Not in it, right? Do all this stuff. Keep all these laws, and through doing that, you'll make a space in your heart for me to live. Hashem says, "I made space for you. Do you think you can make space for me? I got my will out of the way for you. Do you think you could get your will out of the way for me? Could you emulate me by making space in your life and space in your heart and space in your mind for me so that I could live inside you just like you live inside me?" That's part of emulating Hashem, is moving ourselves aside and letting Hashem have space inside of us. So, I think that's the main things that I want to share, but I want to share this in, and I'll take questions, but I want to share this in Sherry's name, the name Sherry, so you can remember what we talked about, okay? So, the SH for Sherry is shine. That's our job, is to shine as brightly as we can in this world. And the way that we shine is through emulating Hashem. Right? Walking in Hashem's ways, doing what Hashem said, we want to emulate Hashem in this world. R is relating to others. We have to relate to others with justice, first, in truth, and second, in kindness and love. But it has to be based on actual truth. So we have to be honest and true and kind and caring and concerned. The second R is to relate to Hashem with depth. To really try to keep Hashem in our hearts on a regular basis and relate with depth on a regular basis. And the why is for yearn. Yearn to do more. Yearn to be more. yearn to grow more, yearn to give more. Know that we could step out of who we are right now into who we can be. That is our opportunity. We're never stuck how we were born. We always have a choice to step into a new self. And so, and that is only happens with yearning. And from what I read about Sherry, she was somebody who yearned, somebody who shone, somebody who really reached out and treated others with love and caring and kindness and respect. So I hope that it's something that we could all do, step into the shining, the emulation of Hashem, and to really lift up the whole world through lifting up our families and lifting up our communities and lifting up our nation and then lifting up all of humanity. And the first step should be in Sherry's memory and merit, that we should all lift ourselves up and grow in incredible ways. Bezrat Hashem. Anybody want to talk about any aspect of it? Questions, thoughts?
Yeah, questions. Also, anyone can, if anyone wants to talk to Ms. Bull privately, also, they can, talk to her afterwards or whatever.
Yeah.
Just remember this. I don't think it's in the article on H, but there were three people in the room with her when she actually went to the next world, and they told me, and they shared many times, that her very last words were Shelo Asani Goy.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was very appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that that we bench in the negative, really, instead of in the positive. Not Sha'asani Yehudi, because who said we actually got there? And not Sha'asani Ben Chorin, or Bat Chorin, because who said we actually are? Right? So we just say Shelo Asani Goy, at least I'm not that. Shelo Asani Shefcha, for Evan, whatever your language is, at least I'm not that. For men, Shelo Asani Isha, because who says there are men yet? They can't say Sha'asani Ish, right? So they can't, right? Who says they achieved that yet, right? Because really, Hashem says, I'm going to start you off as a blob, right? Na'aseh Adam. Hashem is talking to us, according to Rav Avraham Tversky. Na'aseh Adam, I'll make you into a blob. You make yourself into a mensch, right? That's your job, right? So they can't yet bench in the positive. But for us, for women, we do get to bench in the positive. She'asani kirtzono lefachot zeh, right? We're created in Hashem, the way that Hashem wants us to be, which doesn't mean that we're perfect. It just means we get to keep on going. Yeah.
First, thank you so much for sharing
the
Torah with us. I just wondering if you have any practical suggestions for how to translate the lofty, aspirational idea of saying, I'm living with Hashem, I know this is good for my soul, but how do you actually cope with the day-to-day challenges or the big, big upheavals in life?
I personally talk to Hashem a lot. So it's just conversation. But I do talk to Hashem a lot, whether it's request or thanks, on a regular basis. Not necessarily from a siddur, but just I have my different psukim that I ask. And, in times of stress, I say, Ado Hashem leave Elohi Ra, Hashem is with me, and I will not fear. It might not be pleasant. I might not like it. I might not want it. But I know Hashem is with me. I don't have to be scared of it. Right? That I could step into it. Whatever it is, I could handle this because Hashem is with me. So that's for the hard things. And then for sure, Hodo L'Hashem Kitov Kilelam Chasto, you're a fabulous Hashem. I love you. And sometimes I just say, I love you, Hashem. Because sometimes, I really do. You get this feeling, it's so great being here in this world and having this relationship and knowing that you carry this. And it's just so fabulous. So it's really important to talk to Hashem. There's a great Stevie Wonder song. Speaking of songs earlier, usually I don't recommend Stevie Wonder, but he has a great song, Just Go Have a Talk with God. So he talks about there's a free psychiatrist, it's known throughout the world, solving all the problems of men and women, little boys and girls. If you feel your life's too hard, just go have a talk with God. So anyway, it's a nice song. It has all the lyrics are good in that song. So whether you're singing that or whatever it is, but so for me, singing is something, davening like that is important. And then for stepping out of myself, I'll just say this is a meditation that I use. I think I actually shared this in shul when I was here last time. But I actually use this meditation in Shemona Esrei to step out of who I am and to become somebody new. Sometimes I do it physically, and sometimes I just say the pasuk. But Hashem, svatai titach ofi yegiti letacha. Please, Hashem, open up my borders or my boundaries. Open up my lips. But lips are boundaries or borders, like svat hayam. Right. So open me up. And with that openness, please help me float to places that I've never floated to before. Right? Please help me achieve something that I haven't been able to achieve yet. And I'll say it especially like in a difficult time. Like, I'm not big enough for this. I'm only this big and it's not enough for this, right? I need to be much bigger to handle this. So please, Hashem, open up my borders or my boundaries. Let me be bigger and let me be able to accomplish this. But don't let that flow go all over the place and be messy. Let it be ufi yegiti latecha. But sometimes I do it physically. When I'm saying Shemana Esrei, I step out of who I am. And then I say, please help me not be that. Hashem svatai tiftach. And then you could step into the tefillah as in a vulnerable place and let that tefillah shape you into who you're supposed to be. And then step back into a new self to go on into the world. So that's an etza that I use. And what can I tell you? Everybody has to figure out their own path. It really is. It's your own marriage with Hashem. You know, so nobody could tell you how to have your relationship. Those are just some tips about how I have mine.
I have two questions. Mm-hmm. One of them is the four names of the Jews, right? So each name has a certain Bnei's role. So it seems like what you said, it's more about Bnei, like because we're born in, right, the community. Mm-hmm. What about this role? Is it anything?
If there's a Bnei's role...
So I'm
pulling out, because of course there's a lot of depth in each of these names, but I'm pulling out of that the B'nai aspect that we are known as Israel. We're the Israelites. So whether we're the children of Israel or the Israelites or even our state, our modern state, we chose the name Israel because it does speak to the fact that we're a group. So there's also the struggling with God and why Yaakov got that name of Israel. I'm not actually looking at that. For this, I'm looking at why is that the name that we all share. And so we all share that name because we are a group, and you need a critical mass in order to accomplish something. I was thinking of using the mashal. I don't know enough, but I read a little bit in that article about the Rav also, just to think about, you know, as a light shiner, as somebody who wants it, and you are, somebody who wants to shine light in the world, so there's only so much light you can shine on your own. Get a shul, you can shine some more, right? That you actually have a tool and create a little bit of a critical mass to become more of a power. So what you've done here is really in miniature of what Hashem wants to do too, say, guys, I need you to participate a little bit. I'll work with you, you work with me. We have a job to do together, right? So you have to have that. There's a together need. We don't need a lot. There's only 14 million Jews on the whole planet, and not all of them are pulling their weight. Really. So we only need really several million. We probably need all 14 million to actually make, because we're not there yet, right? We need them all. So we need several million to keep the goal alive. We need 14 million, or however many we are, to really make it move forward. In fact, there's a lot of Jews. We'll see how many there are in the end, because a lot have forgotten, but they're still Jewish. So we'll see what happens when they all wake up.
Okay. And I'm sure. You're sure about being straight.
Right.
So can you talk more about what do you mean by straight? And is it really that everybody understands language of straight? Is it true?
Well, that's what Rav Hirsch talks about. He just talks about that, the how. And I don't know, I'm pointing to this because based on Rav Hirsch, but it's in the Hirsch Chumash. It couldn't be in the Chumash because it's not in the Chumash. Well, it is in the Chumash. It's in the Chumash and it's in the Navi Bat language. It's only three times that we're called that. But he does discuss it. In the Hirsch Chumash, he discusses it, where it's, I think, where it says, the Ishar. So what does that mean? So he really does discuss the language of Ishar. Look at the problems that we have. When people are arrested, sadly they are on kind of a regular basis. You know, you have this one arrested for selling kosher meat, but really it's trade meat. And you have that one arrested for cheating the government, and that one arrested for cheating a charity. You know, and everybody's wearing a yarmulke and a suit. And it's like, it's bad for the Jews when that happens. It's not just bad for that person. It makes the Jews look bad, right? So straightness is about behaving in a way. We're supposed to be straight whether or not anybody can see it. I mean, I was thinking about it today. Oh, in the parking lot, I think I drove without buckling in, right? And it was beeping. And I'm thinking, in the parking lot, are you allowed? Or are you kidding? I mean, like, because it's a chok, right? If it's the law that you have to buckle in to drive, then it's a chok of the Torah, Dina de Malchut Dina, in a place where this is the law and it's a just and fair law. We're required by Torah law to keep that law.
So was I transgressing or not transgressing? I was wondering, I should just buckle up and not wonder the question, but, right? Or speeding, like, are you transgressing or not transgressing? It's a hope you have to follow that law. So we're required to be yashar, whether or not people can see that we're being yashar, but it does make a difference. Our yashrus makes a difference in how we relate to others and how we relate to Hashem, but how others relate to us when they can see it. But you can think about the hadras panim, the shiny face of somebody with extra kedusha. You can tell that's not something you can fake, right? I mean, maybe somebody can fake it, but in general, you can't fake that soft, shining face of somebody who davens regularly, has that connection with Hashem, learns, is really tzanua, male or female, but somebody who really has that internally in them. There is something, you can't always see it, but if you can see it, it's not something you can fake. And neither, I think, can you fake that being yeshar as a people. That once it's really woven into the fabric of who we are, we already have a reputation of being smart, right? So you want a Jewish lawyer because they're smart, a Jewish doctor because they're smart, right? A Jewish accountant because they're smart. You don't want them because they're smart so they should get you out of whatever you want them. Hopefully you want them. We have a reputation of smart. Let's get the reputation of yashar so that everybody knows Hashem's people is so straight. And when we're not, it really tears holes in the fabric of who we are and the reputation that we have. So that's our first. That's what he's saying. I'm expounding upon it. But that is what he says, is that yashar is the means through which we transform the world. So, yeah, that's what he says. Yeah.
Well, Yisrael is really Yashar Kel also.
Right. It's also the root, you're right, of the word Yisrael, is Hashem is straight.
And Yashar is not Yisrael then.
No.
It's during Yom Kippur, right? It's the davening, isn't it, for Yom Kippur, probably maybe between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, but it's for sure Yom Kippur. I noticed it.
Good.
But
good that you noticed that. Excellent noticing.
And I'm just curious why all of a sudden that it's used. You know why? At those specific places.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, I have to keep learning.
Me too.
Any other
thoughts?
I think
just the life itself, like life only goes straight. Life cannot go around
right.
The corner. Right.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Right. It is interesting. It's interesting to think about how we were initially bodies of light. Or, with an aleph, and then when we made our big mistake, when Adam and Chav made the big mistake, we became bodies of or, with an ayin, right? He made us garments of leather, which is this, what we have on. Havdalah, when we do this, we're actually looking at our fingernails, and that's the last translucent, light-like part of us. And it reminds us of what our bodies looked like before the chait. So it's to remind us from that meorei ha'esh, the light of before creation and current creation and what it should be like and what it will be like, and that's not rehearsed, that's all.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.